To those of you who have not met him yet, Mr. Robert Tolan, who is the producing director of the Playmaker Repertory Theater of the Department of Dramatic Art here at the university. And he has the offices across the hall from mine, which makes him a special friend. I put up with him, he puts up with me, that makes it go. I am delighted to introduce Mr. Tolan. Bob? That's not working, so you can...
Is there some particular advantage to moving that? If not, I'll just stand here as long as everyone can hear. As an old academically oriented person who made his way through... Hi, Charles. Who made his way through graduate school teaching beginning speech, I always taught my students as I was taught to try to find some common ground with the audience. And I've been thinking about that a lot. And it occurred to me that we really are all in the same business, although perversely, the theater I work for insists on doing its work indoors, whereas you all have to combat the elements and deal with the outside. But I'm really delighted. The actual reason that I'm here is that Mark's wife sold me our house in Chapel Hill. The real bond that exists between us. It has been said, and you all know this, that a picture is worth 1,000 words. I tend to believe it's worth more like 1,100, actually. But I guess that depends on the picture and how it's used. And what we're here to talk about today is the use of photography to help us in our work in the theater, particularly the use of both still and moving images in the media, broadly defined, in order to shed light on a subject which Mark tells me, and I've never looked, but I trust that Mark has, very little has ever been actually written down about. We have a panel of four people representing diverse approaches to the subject. Two of them are photographers, Jane Hemborski, who's with the University of North Carolina, and who does the production photography for Playmakers Repertory Company, and Ed Coas, who is a Chapel Hill photographer with a wide background in performance and performing arts photography. Charles Horton, the arts editor of the Chapel Hill newspaper, and theater critic, and an individual who brings us the perspective, particularly from the print media point of view. And Bill Hanna, producer at WNC Television Public Broadcasting in North Carolina, who's in the business of producing television programs. And so I think we have a broad coverage of the subject. We should be able to leave here in a little over an hour knowing a lot more about this important subject than we did when we walked in, myself included. That's one of the great things about moderating a panel, as we used to call it, a teaching by learning, the chance to learn about it as you're helping to present it. Jane Hemborski has a projector set up, and it occurred to me that it might be a nice way to start things off by presumably looking at some theater photography. And so if, Ruth, are you manning the light board? Fantastic. I'd like to start things off then, and just a word about the format before you take the lights all the way out. Each member of the panel will make an initial presentation, and then perhaps we'll give panel members an opportunity to cross-examine each other, if such should be the case, and then we'd like to open the proceedings up for questions and, importantly, contributions and expertise from the floor. You all have your own perspectives in terms of your needs, the problems, and solutions that you found, and I think it's important that we provide time for you to share what you know with us, as well as vice versa. So now, Ruth. Oh, Jane's going to talk first, and then you give the signal to take the lights.
Right.
Jane Hemborski.
Thank you. Good morning. I am a staff photographer at the university, and I'll tell you just very briefly about my background. I moved down here from New York City where I had a studio. I mainly photographed musicians, actors, and dancers. So my expertise from my previous life living in New York is basically studio work with some location photography. I moved here and with the intent of opening a certain business that my back was backed out, so I was here and I thought, well, now what should I do next? There was an opening at the town newspaper, Chapel Hill newspaper, and I applied for it and got the job, and I found myself doing football, basketball. It was wonderful because the combination of learning the action versus the studio widened my career and my expertise in photography. Then I ended up at the photo lab here almost 2 years ago, and I photograph a lot of professors' portraits. I do a lot for PRC, and all the background I've had in the 12 years as a professional photographer, all of them together have really helped try to, I'll say this right off the bat, theater photography is difficult. We all know that. It's one of the most difficult kinds of photography for any professional. So it's something that takes years and years and years. You can't just learn it by reading a book or being here today. However, this will brighten and hopefully increase your awareness of what to look for. That's what I'm hoping for. Okay, that's a little bit on the background. What I did bring to show you are some examples of some black and white versus color. Because I know a lot of you would like to document your productions in color, but color is especially, in still photography, is especially difficult. I'm going to show you a little bit about both, and let me come out in front so I don't feel so far away from y'all. Getting it, y'all. Notice that from. I've been practicing for 3 years now. Okay, I have some large. I printed these up so you can see them large. They're basically, you need photographs for publicity. Either pre-publicity, before the production is even ready to go, you've got to have shots to get in the newspaper, or to get some sort of publicity pamphlet or leaflet out to the public to get them to come to your production. So the photograph should be good, it should be professional, and it should be basically for newspaper purposes simple, and it should jump off the page. Those are your things. It's got to be alive, it's got to be clean looking and professional. So many things, I'll tell you how I learned to photograph the photography. When I lived in New York, I got the Sunday Times, which is part of living in New York. You have to get the Sunday Times. It takes about a week to read it, and there are all kinds of theater pictures in the Times from all kinds of various photographers from different backgrounds. What I did was I studied those pictures. I never met some of those fellows and women, but I did learn from their photographs, whether it looked terrible in print, whether it looked great in print. Something I saw that looked great, I thought, well, I'm gonna try that. Something that looked terrible, I thought, I'm gonna make sure never to do that. Because the main thing is, how does it go into print? How does it get in the newspaper? How does it get onto your portfolio of your productions coming up the whole year? It depends on what kind of printing is gonna be done. Newspaper is usually not the best quality. So you might want to have a different kind of shot for newspaper than you're going to have if you send it to a printer who has a really fine printing technique to make a fine halftone on it. So you've got two different things there. Color also. Rarely do newspapers use color because it's too expensive for them to use color. If they do and there's a good person that makes a good color separation, then you've got a good chance of getting a good color photo in the paper. But the color is what's important in color, that it says something, not just that there are two or three actors on the stage, but that the color itself pop off the page and say, come and watch this production, it's colorful, or whatever you're going to say about it. Photographs should say something. Okay, one thing that we do here is we usually don't have the set ready 3 or 4 weeks before the show, and we've got to get publicity out to the newspapers around the Triangle area and sometimes further. And so we go to various locations. What I try to do in a location shot, now these were two of the stars in As You Like It. And this, of course, in the newspaper ran about two columns, right? So it's not going to run very big. But as a poster, I mean, obviously the faces are very big, so I'm not so sure you'd want to use this as a poster. However, in the newspaper, when it's small, it is effective. And basically, it is a posed shot, but yet the folks look like they're doing something, or they're thinking something, or something's going on in the picture. And that's what makes it usable in a newspaper or pre-publicity. I chose a background out in the trees where it would be just pretty simple and pretty plain and not get in the way of the two star actors that I wanted to document. So, you know, if you're working with a photographer or if you do take some of the pictures yourself, simple is good, especially for pre-publicity since you don't have a stage to go to. Another example was we found the Wilson Library to be empty, which is a glorious building on campus. And this was a stripping scene, which we put her up on a large, well, I don't know exactly what it was. It had a big world, globe world on there. It was in the center of the dome. The difficult thing about this, now this would be very hard for you to just grab it, was the lighting. There was no lighting here. So somebody was standing on a chair with a flash, almost to fall over, holding it as high as he could, while I exposed for the skin tones and exposed for the background so that I could have a shot that did say something, at least, I mean, the background adds to the shot rather than just there being a person's face. But location, still, you want to make it, you don't want it terrifically cluttered. You still want to realize, now, I don't think this would be as successful in a newspaper as it is in either a brochure or as a poster, because it is a little bit too, it wouldn't really pop off the page. By the time it went small, you wouldn't be able to get the effect of it. Then we go to, actually on stage, well, there's one more I've got where I used an inside and got the four leads together with their bushel of fruit for Pickwick, and pretty much faces, get them alive, get them looking, you know, very much there and very much, this is posed, but yet it's a very alive shot. And I'll tell you how I try to do it. As I said, I've been shooting for 13 years, which it takes a lot of experience, but the thing to start with is talk to them, get them to act, get them to talk to you, especially if you're having them look at you. Communicate with them. Don't be shy, you know, because you've got to bring something up, even though they're actors and that's their expertise. They still sort of, a lot of them, especially, of course, the better the actor, the easier it gets as a professional photographer to photograph a professional actor. I have no problems with that. I enjoy it. When I have to photograph amateurs, it's very difficult because you're trying to make them look like professionals and they just don't, they feel a little uncomfortable with the camera. So you've got to really talk to them, really get them to come out of the shell. Then the last production we did was Dracula. And now Joe Spano is a pro, and he was very easy to do. He was very aware of where I was. I was very aware of what he was doing. And it was great to work with him. And this is a good shot to show. Basically, you've got a lot of costume in there. That's part of the production, is the costume. And the thing that's good about this from a lighting standpoint is you could have done this in the studio. It happened to be on the stage. We were doing an equity call, a photo call. But you can see the catch lights in their eyes and the light comes very nicely into their faces, so they're all very well lit up. And lighting is one of the keys. If you don't have lighting into their faces, if it's basically from on top, that'll make a nice effect, but it won't make a nice publicity photograph to put in the newspapers unless it's a very, very strong photograph. You need to have light in their faces and in their eyes in particular to see what they're doing, because that's where all the action is in their facial expressions. The other thing is, if you are going to use set, like in this example, this is another one I tend to think would not go as well on paper. It shows an effect of smoke coming out, and actors are small. It's very ornate. It shows the whole set. But as a pre-publicity shot in the newspaper, it wouldn't work too well. It just goes too small unless you can get a whole page ad. It would go well probably in some sort of brochure if you can control the printing of it and the largeness of it. But as I say, when it gets so busy like that, it's not as good an example as something that would really, you know, I mean, you all read newspapers. I know when I glance through things, if the photograph jumps out at me, I usually read the article. If the photograph looks boring, I tend to just go on to something else that looks more interesting. I don't know if it's just that my eyes trained more that way, but that's what I tend to do. And then this is an example where I got close on Dracula here, and I just got a touch of the moon up here, just a little bit of the background, instead of the whole set, just a little bit of it. Okay, that shows you a little bit of about black and white, what I've discovered, that just touches on it. Let me show you a little bit of the problems with color. I've got a few slides here. One thing about black and white is you can control your printing. You can get some detail in the shadows, you can get some in the highlights. In color, you have to make an exposure based on one lighting, and I'll show you examples in this. Okay, this is a common stage lighting situation where you've got one light and then you've got something interesting going on in the background. The problem with the photograph is if you're going to expose for the skin tones of the actress, it's very hard to get the whole set in the background. This one, I tried to balance it, once again, taking blood meter readings of both situations and tried to average it without totally losing the control in the actress. Whoops. This is the same shot, another exposure, where I opened up about a stop and a half. And so, once again, this shows the set a little bit. This would be good for documentation, but you wouldn't want to use this for publicity because she has no detail in her face. But once again, with slime, you can either expose one or the other. You can't have both. This is, by the way, Ektachrome. This is an action shot. One thing I learned about taking football shots and basketball, things like that, is it pertains to acting. When they get into a situation like this where they're moving, I usually wait until they reach a peak. You can see they're all sort of up, their legs are up, and they're cheerful in that respect, and I wait till that peak action, and then I shoot. Because I'm shooting probably at a 60th or a 90th, very slow, so you must wait for that peak, you're just going to blur. That's a different exposure. You can see the difference. The person on the left, you can't even see her face because there's no fill in the lighting. And the people up in the back are exposed about three stops different. So that makes it difficult, too, in terms of shooting color. This is a depth of field problem where you've got three subjects, and the director told me, well, go ahead and try to shoot it. And I said, well, it's going to be difficult because the person in the back there, you can see very clearly. I could stand right where I was, and I saw each of those three characters perfectly well. But I said, the camera is not going to do that. Because the camera is very limited. Now, video and film, you can correct your depth of field easier than you can with still photography. So this is a situation where I told him, I don't think this is going to work, but I'll be happy to shoot it for your documentary purposes. But once again, this would not work as a publicity shot, but yet it does document what they did so that they can use that in their files for the next year or whatever future reason. This was done in a studio where everything is very controlled. This is a pre-publicity color shot that they used, I believe, on TV. And the easy thing about going to a studio, once again, you've got a simple background and you can balance your color for skin tones exactly. That's another trick about color photography in theater is that your lights are all different temperatures. So you're going to have blues, magentas, yellows, greens, and you'll say, gosh, it didn't look like that, but the film will only read one temperature of light. And if you've got three different temperatures of lights in your stage light, you can't get them all on one film. There's a good example of an entire set where the color is, it's a little on a yellow side. And one thing, if you're going to use them for free publicity, it'd be good for the photographer to go and do some testing and get the color balance just right so that it doesn't have that yellow cast. This is an example where the costumes are a very subdued color. However, the light was so strong from up above that the key light here was right on top of us. And so it was very hard to expose to get their costumes plus their faces. And you can see their faces are too light, and then in the shadows it's too dark. So in this situation, it'd be better to have, if you're going to do pre-publicity to get color, to actually set the lights beforehand, make sure you've got a lot of fill light. Now this is a good example of how to use get the whole stage where this is what makes the picture. It's not particularly the actors' faces. It's the unusualness of this set that makes this what it is. And then the very blue color. Okay. That's it.
You want me to go on?
That's great. Thank you, Jay. Very wonderful way to start us off by saying some fine production photography. I appreciate your delicacy in handling the question of sometimes unreasonable director's demands, since I directed The Hostage and was the one who asked her to do that impossible picture. I thought it was decent of you not to, not to call, call my attention, or call our attention to that.
Right.
Let's stay with, for the time being, let's stay with the professional photographers and ask Ed Coas if you would make your presentation on this thing.
I didn't bring any photographs. And after seeing Jane's photography, I'm glad I didn't. It was beautiful, commendable. When Mark called me and invited me to come over here, I immediately went to my library, which is quite extensive. I've been in this business 21 years, and started looking through everything I had in about 250 books to see what I could find on theater photography. And I don't really think I could come up with one paragraph about theater photography. However, photography for the theater is not much different than anything else. And insofar as the mechanics are concerned, as Jay was explaining to you, lighting is something you have to understand. Print quality is something that has to be understood. Print quality for the media is definitely something that's very, very important. I think one of the most important things that you can remember in your photography, especially when you're using promotional photography, is professional quality. I do a lot of model portfolios. I see, unfortunately, a lot of models and theatrical portfolios, but I see a lot of them that come to me and they'll show me their portfolio. And unfortunately, most of the pictures were done by their boyfriend or their husband or some friend who happened to have a camera, and the quality is not professional. Therefore, when she walks in with her portfolio, she does not look professional. And the same thing is going to apply to all your productions. If the photographs that you submit to the media are not professional quality photographs, your production is not going to look professional. In talking about the black and white photographs to the media, Jane was showing me some beautiful black and white photographs. They're of great quality. And I'm sure she'll be the first to admit that every newspaper does not reproduce things the way they should. In fact, I haven't seen one yet that could really reproduce them the way they should. However, in each of your areas, when you submit these photographs to them, you've got to determine for yourself just exactly what it is you need for that particular newspaper. Some newspapers will take a photograph that is totally contrasty and make just nothing but mud out of it, and another one will take a picture that has hardly any contrast in it and make it look contrasty effect. So you've got to determine what it is that happens to your photograph, and that usually you can do after you've submitted one or two. You'll see that they take your contrasty photograph and make mud. Well, then you just give them one that's a little bit more contrasty the next time. And photographing any production, I think there are a few technical things that you all should be made familiar with. First of all, there's hardly any film in the world that's going to take stage lighting without some help somewhere. In a lot of cases, if you're going to use artificial light, you're going to destroy the mood of the production, you're going to destroy the lighting, that which is something every one of you worked really hard to get just exactly right, and it's something you want to show in your production. So you've got to use a film that's going to capture it just exactly the way it is. And in doing so, you're not going to find too many films on the market that are fast enough to give you a good reproduction and not be so grainy that you can't reproduce it in a newspaper or whatever. There are some good films on the market. I would suggest that if you just get hold of a good photographic book and brush up on the mechanics of everything, and the idea is to learn the various films that you can use and what you can do with the films. For instance, I'm sure Jane has used black and white film many times and just pushed it to its limits, am I correct? And pushing, what you're doing is just simply overdeveloping the film, and you're telling the camera that your film is a lot faster than what it is. You lie to your camera and then go in and overdevelop it, and you get some fine things. But you have to realize what the film is going to do. If it's a really grainy film, you want to do something that the grain is going to enhance the picture. So you want a background and a set that's going to be enhanced by the grain. And also in color work, the same thing as she was telling you, that, you know, the color temperature is different. If you shot anything in the lighting in this room, it's going to be very red. But that really doesn't make that much difference, I don't think, in photographing theater. I don't think you have to capture the color. You don't have to capture the color the way the film should capture the color, the way the photo books say you should capture it. I once did a one-year thing with the Washington Ballet, and we just simply documented all the various things, all the various productions they had, put together about probably 10,000 slides over a period of a year for them to use in a slide production. I think we ended up using maybe 200 of those slides from the slide production, plus a lot of graphics. But everything that I shot was shot on push film, which is very grainy. In other words, I took color film and lied to the camera and said, you know, this is a lot faster, and we pushed the film. And it enabled me to catch the peak action with very, very low lighting conditions, because very seldom do you get lighting conditions where you're going to have enough for exposure. One thing that you might all think about too is, I don't know how many of you here are art photographers, but when you're shooting a production, remember to bracket. I don't know if you understand what bracketing is, but I'm sure Jane does. When you bracket, you shoot what the meter says to shoot, and then you shoot two stops on either side of what that meter says to shoot, and then you're more apt to come out with what you need. It seems like a tremendous waste of film, but it's not. It's a waste of film if you go out there and shoot and don't get what you need, then you've wasted the film. As far as peak action, that's not too hard to do. Once you watch the production and you see the peak action, the dancer when she kicks or whatever, try to catch it at the end of the kick, not on the way up, because then you're going to get nothing but a blur. I can't really think of too much more to say in the subject of theater photography, except that I know a lot of you don't do your own photography. I know a lot of you are going to hire photographers who are in various outlying areas, because most of your productions are in various outlying areas. And a lot of times you're going to get photographers who are not really up to the job. Not that they're not technically oriented and not good photographers or good professional photographers, but they don't understand theater photography, you're going to have a problem. So the best thing you can do, I think, is to go along with them and show them what you want and tell them what you want. And I think then you'll find that he will grasp what you want and he'll improve in his photography as he goes. And that's about all I have to say, I think.
Okay, thank you, Ed. Let's move from the still photograph to the moving image and ask Bill Hanna to talk to us about the uses of motion picture and videotape in the media for...
Well, television film or television tape is going to be a very specialized field, and regrettably you're going to have to find someone with very expensive specialized equipment, and it's going to cost you some money, I'm sure, if you plan on doing I would suggest a 30-second promo for most stations. Most stations will maybe run your PSA that's 30 seconds. They're not going to spend the time to run your 60-second PSA. They would probably prefer a nice 10 seconds that they could jam in somewhere between soap or whatever commercials, and they might get that in. Let me give you some cost figures. If you're thinking about doing this, and depending on where you are, it may be helpful, it may not be, so you will know what to expect. This first company probably operates with two people out of the bedroom of their house. I advise you to check what they're doing and say, let me see some of the things you've done before you hire them. They're young, they may be very good, or they may be not very good. Charges would be probably about $120 for the first hour, and maybe $100 for every other hour after that to work with them. They're going to charge you about $750 a day to do your tape work. This would be in 3/4-inch tape, and I'll get into that later. And editing it together, they're going to charge about $75 an hour to use their equipment. So, as you see, it's going to run you into some money, but this is a cheap group. A higher group, and these are people who are used to doing television commercials. This particular people I call do Hudson Bell furniture rental commercials, Roses commercials, so they have experience in the field. They know what they're doing. Their day rate would be $1,750 to come to your drama and do something. If they did it on film, the cost would be $1,200 plus the cost of the film. So you're going to end up paying almost the same regardless of what rate you want. And they're going to charge you about $250 an hour to edit. Or if it's on 3/4-inch tape, about $95 an hour. Now, the more expensive people, of course, have higher equipment. They've got overhead they're paying. They're paying for their $50,000 camera and their $100,000 videotape machine. So that's the reason their costs are so high. You may be able to talk them into doing your PSA at a lower rate, PSA public service announcement, I just presumed everybody knew that, because it'd be fun for them to do. They've probably been doing political commercials, talking heads, taking shots of furniture, and they're bored to death with doing it. Shooting an outdoor drama is fun, it's exciting, it's artistically fulfilling. So suggest that to them. Maybe you can talk them down a little bit and get it done a lot cheaper. You can shoot your PSA on film or tape. I would suggest tape. Most of the new little companies are going to have tape equipment now. And if you just want it to go to a television station, they're going to end up putting their film on tape anyway to put it on the air. It's safer. Just all stations now do that. You can control it better. If you want some other use at civic club meetings or something like that, you're going to have to shoot it on film. So you can have access to a projector, you know, at the local Kiwanis pub or something. But think about how you're going to end up using your product before you decide which method to go. I would suggest tape if it's just going to television. Let me go just briefly through some terms, and working with tape, it is getting more and more confusing. There are so many different videotape formats on the market and even in television stations, and I'm not even going to go through all of them. The old format, and they would not shoot this in the field, is a 2-inch tape called quad tape. It's being used less and less. There's 1-inch tape. If the people are going to shoot your promo on 1-inch tape, you've got a more expensive company, but you've got a company that has got some very good equipment and will give you a very good image. 3/4-inch tape is, there's a professional quality 3/4-inch tape, which most video companies are going to be using. It's a good quality and be fine, much less expensive. If someone comes in and wants to do your original shooting on VHS or Beta with 1/2-inch tape, they don't really know what they're doing. I suggest you keep searching around for another company. You can't tape, because of technical requirements, and this gets even more complicated than I know about, you can't show that tape over the airways. The Federal Communications Commission has all sorts of restrictions on what can be shown, what can't be shown. Your TV picture comes to you with lots of coded information in it, so it won't flip-flop, won't turn green, etc. So it's a very specialized technical media. So 1-inch, 3/4-inch tape, if those companies say 1-inch, they know what they're doing. Again, light levels. I don't know of any outdoor drama in North Carolina that's going to have adequate light levels, really, for someone to come in and say, let me shoot your show while it's going on. Even the bright scenes, say at the Lost Colony where I used to work, they would be okay. I mean the very bright scenes where everything is on full. Anything else, once again, you're going to get the problem of you're going to be able to see Sir Walter Raleigh. You aren't going to be able to see the background because there's no light on it. It's going to look like the tombs. It's just not going to be very exciting. You're going to have to set up something in the daytime, a special call, and it's going to take a lot of time. Moving television equipment around or film equipment, motion picture equipment around is a lot different from moving a 35mm camera around. I would say every setup, every time you move that camera, it's going to take you a half hour to an hour of just dead time to relight and everything. Now you know how much it might cost you to hire someone. Think about trying to get it done for free. Here are some ideas. Is someone from the TV station on your board of directors? That's always nice. They can always send their own crew out to say, hey, let's go do a little piece on Gone with the Wind, not Gone with the Wind, Cherokee, Under These Hills. Do they have a little public service announcement with their local station break? The station in Durham has, "We're Heart of the Heart of Carolina," and they show a shot of something. Why couldn't they show a shot of York, of Lord Rama, instead of a shot of the town square in Fayetteville? Often they'll do little things. The Children's Museum needs you for their station ID. This is Public Service Durham, North Carolina, Channel 11. Try and get in with something like that. Channel 5 recently sent their weatherman up to New York City, and he appeared on one of the soap operas, had two lines. They talked about that for 2 weeks on the air. I've never seen such free publicity given to a soap opera. All weathermen now at local stations are hired for personality reasons, not because they can read the news or anything. Most of the local general managers try to light their news with the weatherman because he can be personable. Invite him to come to your show and do a little bit. He'll bring the news crew along with him. You get free publicity. PM Magazine people are always looking for somewhere to do their little tie-ins. Try and get them to do their little tie-ins between the shows on your stage, maybe in costume of one of your lead characters. You can also try and do get them there for some sort of news event, although you never know about that. You can schedule some sort of news event or, quote, actuality. And whether they're going to show up, it depends on what else is happening that day. You never know where the assignment editor is going to send someone, but you can always sort of try and fake some news event, you know, to try and get them there. One thing they do at all the sports casts, when all the coaches have their meetings and all the political people have meetings, they feed their reporters. That might be an idea. Invite a newsman to lunch, and you might get some free publicity. Plan ahead if you want a station to do a segment on their woman's show or their magazine show. Don't call them and say, "Gee, someone is coming on day after tomorrow, and can you come over?" I don't know about a lot of commercial stations in the state, but I know our equipment at the moment is booked for the next 2.5 weeks completely, all 3 cameras and the mobile unit. We couldn't possibly do anything on short notice, even though we might like to. You've got some personality coming in to your show. So if you know something coming up a month from now, get to your television station as soon as you can. Everyone has a tendency to wait for the last moment, but it really gets very difficult for them to work you into their schedule. Now, I've been talking about commercial stations. Think about cable. I don't know in your area. Most cable people, this is another freebie, and I thought all cable people, but I was corrected, have to have a public access channel. That, exactly what that means or how much they will do for you depends on what their charter is with the local community. In Chapel Hill, they wrote lots of stuff in there to get the license, and they will give you free equipment, they will teach you how to run it, and they will put whatever you come up with. In the case of local, some of it is out of focus and everything else, but they will put it on the air on one of the local outlets, one of the local cable channel outlets. So that the public access thing that most of the cable companies have distinct possibilities. If you want to do a half-hour show or a talk show or show extended scenes from your show, but check with the local licensee, because they vary from one to the other. Of course, free is always best, and if you have to pay to do PSA, and I suggest because of the expensive equipment and the technical knowledge has to go along with it, you're going, if you really want to come up with a good product, you need to find your good production house. They're all over North Carolina. One of the problems is they're here today and gone tomorrow because they can't keep up their monthly payments and all that equipment when the business doesn't come in. But search around and ask to see, well, let me see something you've done before you make up your mind on who to hire, so you know what product you're going to end up with.
Thank you, Bill. Well, we've heard from three producers of images. Let's turn now to consumer of images. We've all been frustrated sometimes by our inability to get newspapers and other publications, media, to use what we send them. And to some of us, that's a mystery we've never probed. And so I hope that Charles will give us all some wonderful ideas about the kinds of photographs that are most likely to get published in newspapers and what, from the point of view of the newspaper, is being looked for in good performance photography. Charles Horton.
I always suspected people that an outdoor drone were masochists. After I came 2 years ago and chewed your tails out about your publicity, you're asking me back and confirmed it. Three two-letter words. On, in, and ID. On time, in focus, and identify the photographs. God and the mails were with me. This morning it came in. It wasn't on time, it's not in focus, and it's not ID. I'm going to give a lot of thought to finding out who this came from so that I can give them some. Find out what the deadlines are for your media. Mine can be 10 days. If your production is going to open on a Saturday, I have control of my pages for the previous Sunday. And the Sunday edition has an entertainment magazine. That's what you want it in. The Sunday before the Saturday opening, which means it's put to bed the Wednesday before that Sunday, which means I write it on Monday and Tuesday, which means if I have it the Friday before that, I have a mental note to give you the lead story, so that if I have it on the Friday, before the Monday that I write it, before it's put to bed on Wednesday, before the Sunday comes out, before the Saturday, lots of you haven't even cast your shows. You don't even know whether it's going to go up or not. But it seems like a long time when I hear this gasp on the other end of the line. But find out now how many of the deadlines are not that. But generally, your entertainment section, New York Times, all the papers are put to bed a week before. It's under the heartbeat they can wait for. So if it's not on time, remember there are only two images of your show for the 6 weeks before it opens. One of them is the artwork that people see from the media. The second image is the last production that that director directed. The second one I can't do anything about. The first I can, the image you have. Many of you pay more for a prop in a fleeting scene in your production than you pay your photographer. Somehow the idea is still instilled in us that what we pay the photographer is wasted money, that it's not part of the production. The worst thing that's happened to theater in this area in the last 2 years with Jane Hamborski is coming to town, because she jarred the whole arts world by showing professional photographers and comparing them
to some of the artwork that was coming in from Polaroids, from some of the production. She showed us a Saturday. Since Dane Hamborski started doing the photography for Playmakers Repertory Company, they have had exactly 200% more photographs in my newspaper than they did before. 200%. Has nothing to do with the caliber of the production, but the quality of the photographs. When you're going through the stack of photographs that are on your desk, hers jump out, leap out. They arrive on time, they're in focus, and they're ID beautiful. And when you are fighting deadlines, let's face it, sometimes the things that are most in order are the things you will do. You're not likely to call unless you really care about an organization and sort of understand that they're on a shoestring. You aren't likely.